So, time to have a border poll here. Scotland has had its say. Should we now have a vote on whether Northern Ireland should stay in the UK? Sinn Féin has called for a referendum here to decide whether we should have a United Ireland. Look at that. It's all kicking off the phones already. 08459 555 678. There are calls coming in from Dungiven, from Saintfield, from Derry, stroke Londonderry. Martin McGuinness says things will never be the same again for Scotland or elsewhere. Peter Robinson says there is no point in a border poll. The MLA's Dahi Mackay. Good morning, Dahi, from Sinn Féin. Good morning, good morning.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, and the DUP's Peter Weir. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Well, why not? Why not give the people a say, Mr. Weir?
Well, I think that what we would have, we'd have a fairly pointless gesture because it is clear, it is pretty certain what is going to happen in terms of border poll. There's clearly not a majority for United Ireland, not even within a shout of that. And what you'd be going through an exercise to get a foregone conclusion. But additionally, so there's no actual benefit in that regard.
Well, opinion polls are one thing, Peter, but you can see with opinion polls how much they moved and how momentum and excitement moved in Scotland.
I think from that point of view, Scotland is a very different beast from Northern Ireland. We heard in Scotland on the issue of independence, you know, there was a large number of people who were able to point out that where families were divided, where indeed the levels of tribal division weren't necessarily that aren't to the same extent in Northern Ireland. Sorry, that aren't in Scotland to the same extent as they are in Northern Ireland, where you get husbands and wives divided. I don't think that would be the case here.
Well, let's test it.
It's fairly clear if you look at all the not only opinion polls but every survey. Whatsoever, there's an overwhelming support for the union and indeed very little enthusiasm for United Ireland.
So what are you frightened of then, doing the poll?
Well, because there's at least two downsides to this. First of all, I think what we need to be doing is concentrating on the issues which are of proper significance, which is ensuring that Stormont is brought into a much more functional way, that it is much more efficient and effective, and indeed particularly the big elephant in the room of welfare reforms is properly tackled. So a border poll will act as a distraction to that. And secondly, there is no doubt that if you have a border poll, it is going to whip up community tensions. You know, we saw even in Scotland...
Giving people a say, part of that democratic process whips up tensions,
yeah,
doesn't it?
People have a say in every election. Indeed, you know, you could make an argument that in terms of the division between unionism and nationalism, it's been arguably the central point in every election.
See, maybe, Peter, it would clear the air. For a generation. Think about what you'd be able to say if you won it.
Well, first of all, from the point of view of clearing the air, from a generational point of view, I think within the Belfast Agreement, once a border poll is triggered, it then becomes actually part of a necessity to have that once every 7 years. So actually, you'd be creating a perpetual sense of argument. But we saw even in Scotland, where there shouldn't have been the same level of visceral arguments, that it did create a lot of tensions in the community. Indeed, we've had at the weekend to have a service of reconciliation between the two sides. Could you imagine just the level of stirring up a community tensions that was here?
Yeah, but Peter, the point is it wouldn't have to be done under the Good Friday Agreement. You see, what has happened in Scotland surely has changed the whole landscape of politics throughout the UK. There's going to be a lot of horse trading now. If the Secretary of State agreed to it, there could be a one-off border poll.
Well, I mean, with respect on it, I'm not sure whether legally that would be the case, but even taking that aside, it wouldn't prove anything, but on the other hand, I think it would create a lot of community tension. I mean, you saw, as we know from a couple of years ago, whatever people's views on the rights and wrongs of this, whenever you had a situation in which, in terms of the threat to Britishness, there was a very stupid decision taken, for instance, to take down the flag or limit the flying of the flag simply from the City Hall. And we saw the impact on community relations there. Could you imagine a situation in which... at least on the face of it, the entire existence of the state was under pressure. You would stir up massive amounts of community tensions for no benefit because you'd then have an end result, which would be that the vast majority of people would support the retention of the union.
Dahi, we'll come to you in a second, I promise, but there are loads of calls coming in already today. Let's hear from one of our listeners, Harold in Portadown. Morning, Harold.
Hello, Stephen. I would call her bluff. Well, Sinn Féin's bluff. What's Peter Weir afraid of? He's only after saying there that they're no call for because they don't want it. Call her bluff.
What way would you vote?
Well,
what way would you vote?
Well, now that's up to me.
You're not going to tell me. He's away. Dahi Mackay, Peter Weir, you've heard him this morning. No point, it would just raise tension.
Well, I think what Scotland has shown, Stephen, is that politics
shouldn't just be left to the politicians. We've had a turnout of over 85%. We've seen the democratic, the exercise of democracy by 16 and 17-year-olds, and the sky didn't fall in. And I think what has happened in Scotland has been a good thing. It's been good for democracy, and has also shown that we can have a mature debate about our future, whether that lies in the union or in a reunification of Ireland. So we should have that debate.
Well, let's continue the debate now. Here's your big chance, Mr. Mackay. Sell Irish unity to people listening this morning. Let's imagine the poll was tomorrow morning. Sell it.
Well, I think, Stephen, that self-governance, having control of your own affairs, is absolutely key.
Is that not what devolution gives us?
And economic outcomes. We don't have proper and full devolution as it is. I mean, what we have at the moment in regard to corporation tax, we've been lobbying for years to get corporation tax so we can vary it. And in the meantime, we have lost economic opportunity.
You can still get that under devolution. You might get it yet.
Absolutely. But the point of the matter is that in terms of the population of this island, there's some 6.5 million people. It makes sense to have an all-island economy. It makes sense not to be sending many of our taxes across a I mean, if you look at some of the details and some of the fancy accountancy that is put in place by Treasury, we are spending, you know, taxpayers here are sending some £700,000 through the system that IC ends up paying for Scottish museums. You know, that's actually on the books. So this illusion.
Where are you getting that from?
Well, that is from the 2011 Treasury Country and Regional
Taxpayers
Analysis.
Here spend £700,000 on Scottish museums.
Absolutely.
What about the £10 billion a year that we get from London on top of the taxes we raise here? The estimated £10 billion. How would you fill that gap if there was Irish unity?
Well, there's two points to make there. I mean, a lot of that money goes towards your British civil list, your British military operations, royal travel and palaces, all those kind of things. But in my opinion, should be going towards public services here. And those.
But the £10 billion, Dahi, estimated £10 billion that we get extra from London, where would you find that money from?
Well, that's how you deal with some of it. The other point is that those calculations do not take into account the economic activity that would be generated if we had our own economic levers, if we could make savings in terms of an all-island health service, all-island public services, and reduce the duplication.
And, so those and that would add up to £10 billion, would it?
Absolutely, because at the moment,
really?
the North is not punching above its weight in terms of our economic
So to be clear, just so that I'm crystal clear on this, it is Sinn Féin's position this morning that if we had all Ireland bodies, like, for example, one health service across the island, that we could save £10 billion.
Well, I wouldn't
agree. A year.
I wouldn't agree with the £10 billion figure, Stephen, because I've already outlined a couple of the examples of the accountancy that is put in place by the Treasury.
Well, how much would we save?
What we are missing at the moment is transparency in terms of the Treasury. So we need a proper baseline, and that is why we need to have this debate about a border poll, and we should put pressure on the Treasury to release the figures in terms of where our taxes go to and how they come
back. Be generous. Let's have it. Let's say it's £5 billion a year. You know, it's estimated to be 10, but let's say it's £5 billion a year that we get from London on top of taxes that we actually raise. You think that could be saved?
Well, I think £5.7 billion we have estimated goes towards British civilists, British military operations in Afghanistan and elsewhere, royal travel, palaces, all of those sort of things. And we have identified those as being not necessary for taxpayers here to contribute towards and believe that it should go towards
Peter
services.
Well, I think, you know, this kind of shows just the fantasy politics of both the border poll, indeed what Sinn Féin's economics. I mean, to listen to Dathay, you'd think actually that taxpayers in Northern Ireland are actually subsidising the rest of the United Kingdom. We are a net beneficiary. Once you take off any money that goes into what might be described as central funds, you know, and the idea that we'll actually we'll save on actually spending on a few palaces that actually then will become economically self-sufficient in that regard, it's fantasy economics. We benefit to the tune of around about £10 billion. You can make an argument about slightly more, slightly less than that, but that's the ballpark figure. If you look at what happened from the point of view of the poll in Scotland, in many ways there's an argument that that the campaign in terms of the energy was won by the yes side, but actually ultimately the arguments were won by the no side. And indeed, particularly what swayed the vote was what might be described as economic unionists, people who, whenever push came to shove, weighed up whether they were better off as part of the United Kingdom and voted that way. Now, I think in Scotland, in terms of the economic arguments, they were closer to being more marginal. I think it was clear that people were better off in the UK, but at least there was some level of economic case. You know, the reality is that we are dependent upon £10 billion coming in. There is no satisfactory. You know, Daffy or others can wish away that amount of money and pretend that isn't the level of subsidy. But it's the economics of the madhouse, and I think the bulk of people realise that.
So present the figures, present the numbers to the people in Northern Ireland,
and with respect,
and give them a choice as to how they will vote.
And with respect, they are. And every election there has been a clear majority of people support the retention of the union. And indeed, on every attitude survey, on every opinion poll, whatever way you put it, shows that even actually it's questionable whether a majority of Catholics want to see a united Ireland nation. And even from that point of view, I mean, Daffy talks about the synergies of a 6 million.
You've nothing to fear then.
What's that?
You've nothing to fear, so give it to the
people. I think from that point of view, the problem is there's absolutely nothing to gain. And let's be honest on it, irrespective of whether it's a foregone conclusion or not, there is no doubt that this will create economic tensions. You know, and even from the point of view of the argument, I mean, we have two very different health services. You kind of got a question for Sinn Féin, which health service they want. And indeed, you know, the reality is we have benefited massively by being part of the United Kingdom economically.
Well, do you want one that your own health minister says could be unsafe soon?
If you're in the United Ireland without that level of subvention, I mean, if you're talking about removing £10 billion from the equation, you're probably looking at about halving amount of spend on
Here's
health service.
Alex in Lisburn.
And that's the reality.
Morning, Alex.
Morning, Stephen. No, I was just listening to the Dagi McCann there.
Dagi McCann.
The suggestion we spend the £10 billion could be made up for by not having to contribute to royal palaces and the civil list. I mean, down in the Republic of Ireland, they have houses. They have houses that are looked after by the government. They have the defence forces. They have them over like in Lebanon at the minute. That all has to be paid for. And to suggest that we were so much better off without the civil list, my goodness, it's quite frightening that that's the sort of level of economic literacy we have in the Assembly.
Have you a question for Dahi?
Well, I catch himself off.
Say good morning to him. Would you say good morning to him? At least be polite to the man and say good morning to him.
Well, good morning. We saw in Scotland where it brought tensions to the surface. Would the same thing not happen in Northern Ireland? And is that Sinn Féin's motivation to keep the pot boiling? Because that's the only benefit I can see from Sinn Féin's point of view.
Well, I think, Stephen, that in terms of all of this, there needs to be a reduction. There needs to be a doing away with all the scaremongering that we've had in debates over the years. Because we've heard from Peter this morning in reference to the Scottish debate, scaremongering about how that debate was held. That debate was held in a mature fashion, with a democratic outcome that people have accepted. Now, we want to see the same here. We want to see a mature approach to this. We don't want to see any of the nonsense.
So you don't think there'd be any trouble in the streets here? Look at what happened here with the flag protests and all that kind of malarkey. You think there would be no trouble here, no shots fired here?
Well, that depends on the maturity of unionist politicians, Stephen.
All right. It's all one-sided then, is it?
We have to accept democratic outcomes from debates within Belfast City Council or anywhere else. But the fact of the matter is that we do not have the figures from Treasury to make an accurate assessment of where our future is best placed. In Scotland, what they did was the Scottish Government produced their own statistics that showed that they generated a surplus of £2.5 billion.
Well, if you're serious about this, Dahi, if Sinn Féin are serious about this, why is the Deputy First Minister, Martin McGuinness, not asked for these figures? He is in the executive, after all.
We have asked for the figures. We have pushed for them. There's been a NICVA report has been released in terms of the deficit in terms of these figures as well. But the other thing to bear in mind as well, Stephen, is that there's a threat to the continuation of the North remaining within the European Union in the years ahead as well. And we believe that is not in our best economic and political interest. And that is something that should be put to the people in terms of a border poll, in terms of whether our place is in Europe.
Martin McGuinness met David Cameron just a number of weeks ago, didn't he? Did he ask for the figures then?
Well, I don't know the precise details.
How high is this up your agenda?
Well, the party is constantly raising the matter of the statistics that are coming from British, or not coming from the British Treasury. And we're calling on all other parties, Stephen, is to join with us in calling for these figures and calling for transparency so that we can accurately assess where our money is going to.
Tony in Lagmore. Morning, Tony.
Good morning, Stephen. There's a couple of things, right? He said there that you wouldn't have one family vote for one thing. One of the things said that families wouldn't vote for one thing or the other. They would all be united in voting for one thing. I don't believe that, right? I know Protestants, right? Actually, my father was a Protestant who would have been voting for United Ireland, right? So not only that, you have there's 2.5 million people in the north of Ireland. If they were to go into United Ireland, they would have a big say in the running of the country themselves. You know, they don't realise that there would be a big majority. Okay. They wouldn't be. Now there's loads more. There's loads more here. Hold on. You know,
come on, quick.
Hold on. Give everybody time. Give me time. Right? You have one of the richest gold mines in the world, one of the 10th richest gold mines in the world, has just been discovered here, right? That hasn't been taken into account. There is actually another gold mine down in the Fermanagh borders.
Where's the gold mine?
Right, there's two gold mines. Do you not listen to your own news? You know, listen, one of the 10th richest gold mines was found in the Spurrins there. Right, they haven't even got to the bottom of the gold mine. Exactly, they haven't started taking it out yet. But I would like to be knowing where the profit of that's going. Right, now you can actually check newses. You can check your own team there.
I haven't looked at the newses. I haven't heard that in the newses.
Here, listen. You may as well just checking up on it. I think the rest of people would also. But also, talking about the National Health Service.
Yes.
Right.
Well, I want to ask Dahi Mackay a question actually on the health service, because you see, Dahi, if you use any services in the Republic without being referred there by a GP, there's a charge of €100. Is that what you'd want to have in Northern Ireland too?
No, it's important to bear in mind, Stephen, I mean, in reference to the Scottish debate again, I mean, there was an understanding that if Scotland voted for independence, that process would not have been completed for 4, 5, or 6 years. So it's important to understand that we need to have the debate to paint a picture of what a reunified Ireland would look like, how we would deal with the issues in terms of the health service. But the very fact that you'll be reducing duplication.
The question was there's a hundred. Hold on, Tony. There's a question. There's a €100 charge to see your GP. To use any if you haven't been referred by your GP? Would you support that in Northern Ireland?
No, we would. We would support across the island of Ireland a health service that is free in terms of its delivery, as it is in the north at the moment.
Right. So you'd change that. You'd get that changed in the south, would you? So if you think about it, that would be an extra cost on top of the 10 billion that you'd be short already, wouldn't it?
Well, that is something that we believe that Ireland can afford. Ireland can stand on its own 2 feet.
Okay.
And the north is losing out because, in comparison to the rest of the island, in terms of economic growth, we are already falling behind.
Okay, here's Robert in Belfast. Go on, Robert.
I don't think it's about economic growth and wealth. I think it's about, as far as the unionist community are concerned, about ascendancy, about being in control. And just picking up on Mr. Weir, or I call him Peter, because I want to be respectful on his comments, when he referred to what is normally referred to as the Good Friday Agreement, he calls it the Belfast Agreement. I sort of find that unionists talk like that, who are sort of leaning towards a DUP religious type attitude, where they're always praying and calling on the Lord to help them, etc., etc. You know,
What's your point?
My point really is, you know, I mean, you know, why do you want to object to all of this here, to reuniting a country which was divided without the consent of anybody by force of arms, etc.? And even when it was the 9 counties, it was separated off again by force of arms to make sure that it was a permanent Protestant majority. I've got nothing against Protestant people. In my own family, I'm a father of a mixed group of people. You know, all my friends are the usual cliche are all Presbyterians, etc. The fact is, it's ascendancy, it's about power, it's not wanting to share, and it's also hanging on the fact of the old 900-year occupation and even the 100 years of unionist misrule here. They do not want to share power. They won't even do it in Stormont. They walk past each other in the corridors. They don't even talk to each other. They won't lift their head.
Look, it's down to Northern Ireland which way they want to vote, isn't it?
I'm saying
that's the agreement.
I take all the points all of those people are saying, and I'm saying it with respect, but it has a standard thread of reality in it.
Okay. Listen, thank you, Robert. Diane McKay, just before you go this morning, I noticed that Michelle Gildernew has told the Labour Party conference that our political process is untenable. Can you tell us what Sinn Féin means by that?
Well, I think quite
because untenable means it cannot continue.
Well, it cannot continue, Stephen, if the British and Irish governments do not start to take their responsibility seriously and we address the issues that the unionist politicians are refusing to address, including flags, parades and the past. So there's no doubt from Sinn Féin's perspective that there is a degree of urgency about the Assembly and the Executive that others are refusing to recognise, and I include the British and Irish governments among that. And that is why we are putting that message to the Labour Party.
Untenable is defined in the dictionary as not able to be maintained. So our political process is not able to continue. This is what Michelle Gildernew, senior member of Sinn Féin, has said over the weekend.
Absolutely. And that outlines, Stephen, the seriousness of the situation that we are now in if we do not deal with the issues that the executive and the unionist parties are refusing to deal with.
Here's exactly what she told the Labour Party conference. It was yesterday. Our political process is in a perilous, I would actually say, untenable position. So Sinn Féin are saying it's over?
We're not saying it's over, Stephen. We're saying that it is in a perilous position.
Untenable.
That the unionist parties have to engage in proper power sharing with their nationalist and Republican colleagues, because in recent years, since the issue of the flags, since the issue of Ardoyne has risen its head, that the unionist parties have threatened to pull down the institutions over these issues. That is not tenable. Yeah.
Well, you can hardly complain, Peter Weir, because Peter Robertson has said not fit for purpose. I wonder if you're both just waiting, Sinn Féin and the DUP, for the other to bring this whole operation down.
Well, no, I mean, I think that Peter Robinson is much closer to the mark. I wouldn't just quite use the language that Michelle Gildernew did, but there is a very major problem which needs resolved, which actually, I think, reinforces the point that we need to be getting, looking at those issues, looking at the issues of welfare reform and how we can make the Assembly much more functional in that regard. And that actually should be the focus rather than, to be perfectly honest, the degree of nonsense of discussion of a border poll. I mean, do we want to have a year in which we actually put everything else aside and simply campaign one way or the other as to whether we remain part of the United Kingdom? Or do we actually want to try and tackle the issues in terms of issues around welfare, around health, around functionality?
But can you, Peter? You see, can you just pretend that it's business as usual and you're going to go on for the next year? If you have Robinson saying not fit for purpose, have Sinn Féin saying it's untenable, it's not business as usual.
Yeah, but with respect on it, if we're saying that the current arrangements are not fit for purpose, we're clearly not saying that it's business as usual. We're clearly saying that we need to get in there. We need to work at this and actually have fairly tough discussions and negotiations to try and fix the problems that are there. You know, that's, I think, where the focus should be, not on sort of the fantasy politics of a border poll. Those are the immediacies, and that's what we've got to tackle.
Do you think the situation here is untenable?
I wouldn't use that, but I would much prefer what my leader said, and I think that what we have got by way of arrangements are not fit for purpose, which is maybe a slightly different emphasis, but one I think that is a challenge to all of us to actually try and knuckle down to get solutions to these
things. All right. Peter, thank you. Dahi, thank you. Nice to talk to you both this morning.